Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
High noon on a Celtics Wednesday, which means it's time for Justin Turpin. Call him Turp. Here on WEEI, you can check out all his work on WEEI.com, on Twitter and Instagram, Justin M. Turpin. Good follow for all of your Celtics info out there. What's going on, Turp?
What's up, guys?
What's going on with this squad? We're trying to make heads or tails of the Celtics. It's going to take me a lot to get like worried or anything like that, but the way they've been playing over this stretch, last time we had you in, there were some hiccups. We were wondering like what the hell happened on Christmas and everything else. They've ping-ponged wins and losses over their last five games, barely hung on to beat the Pelicans. Like, what in your mind is going on with them right now?
I brought some numbers. You want me to dive
bring the numbers.
Dive away. We don't
paint the picture.
We don't do enough numbers.
Turp typically is running Twitch, so you know we're light on numbers typically. That is not our specialty.
No.
So give us some numbers. Yeah. And speaking of numbers, phone number if you have Celtics questions for Turp, 617-779-7937. A guaranteed time to talk Celtics every week here on Jones and Keefe, High Noon with Turp. Give us the numbers.
All right. So they started out 19-4. Over that stretch, they attempted 51 three-pointers. That was first. They made 19 at a 37.3% clip. Okay. Opponents attempted 35.3. That was the fourth fewest, so there's a big disparity there. Hmm. They made 12.5, and they shot at 35.4. So that's 6.5 threes per game.
And so real quick. I was going to do the math, which I should have not done. So
six
you go
and
ahead.
A half threes. That clocks
He's
out.
He's the math guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're the math guy over there.
I got it all coming. Yeah. Came prepared. 6.5 threes clocks out to 18 to 19 points per game.
That's
on
a
the
big
perimeter.
Difference.
That's a big difference.
Yep.
Since the Grizzlies game, which I'm kind of using as the line of demarcation, they're 9-7. They're attempting 47 threes, so four fewer. It's still first, but a little bit less, making 16.3 and knocking down at a 34.6% clip. Opponents are making 14, shooting 36.7, and they're doing it on fewer attempts at 38.2. So what was an 18 to 19 point advantage on the perimeter is now down to just 6.
Okay, and one more time, the cutoff is they were 19-4 to start the year, and they're what since?
9-7.
Okay.
No, back and forth.
Good.
So that's since the Grizzlies game, and that's the one they shot like 63s, and they were leaving Drew Holiday open. They couldn't make any.
Okay, so hang on. So your thesis.
Good numbers. Good job, Terp.
Thank
your
you.
Thesis
we'll talk to you next week.
Is, yeah, we'll see you next week, Terp. Back down the hall, as Marshan would say, back in the closet. Your thesis, if I'm reading it properly, is they need to shoot more threes. They were shooting more threes, attempting more threes. They were 19-4. They've dropped off. They've shot less, and now they're 500-ish, 9-7. Over this more recent stretch. Is that fair to say that's your thesis? They're not shooting enough threes.
I do think they need to shoot more threes, and people probably hate that.
Yeah, they're like, what?
The offense has gotten worse when they've shot less threes, and there's more percentage that you can get into.
But also, doesn't it sound like they need to defend their opponent's three better?
They do.
That's sort of the key to me. Like, that's what jumped out is, like, you were hitting a decent percentage. The percentage has gone down. You've taken fewer, so that's going to limit it. But it seems like the opponent over the last 16 games has been much more efficient shooting threes.
Right, yeah. And over those 16 games, the Celtics have shot under 30% 7 times, and they're 1-6 in those games. And it feels like every time that
and the one win was the Pelican game,
the Pelican game. Yeah, yeah. And they shouldn't have won that game. They kind of did everything they could to lose it.
No, but Tatum missed two free throws. Derek White had the 5-second violation.
There. And he fumbled the ball out of bounds on the inbounds, too,
and
which
McCollum,
is just so weird.
McCollum missed what looked like a good look
close,
for a game winner.
Yeah,
he had a good look. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not as simple as they're just missing shots because they're driving, kind of they're getting back to bad habits.
Okay, so I put the missing shots thing to the side for a moment because I do want to get to that. But are teams defending them any different? In other words, are they playing different because they're being forced into it, or have they tried to change the way they played, or are teams saying, we're not giving you the three anymore, we're running you off the three?
Well, they're definitely, teams are playing them differently. And another part of that, too, is they're just, teams are punching above their weight. Like, that Pelicans team had 8 wins, and they came in and gave the Celtics everything they can handle. And part of it, too, is if the Celtics are going to go with this strategy of leaving guys open, they did it with DeJounte Murray the other night, they tried it with Embiid earlier, they've done it to a bunch of different players. If you're going to do that and you're going to let players shoot threes, you have to make yours. Like, that's the whole thing. You can't just let them shoot these threes and then not make them on your end, because then that's where that disparity happens. So, yeah, teams are defending them differently, and also players are missing shots that they normally would make. Like, look at Derek White. I mean, he's shooting like 20% in January. It's not really used to seeing that from him. So eventually water will find its level, and they'll figure out how to kind of counter-react here. But it's been, you know, live and die by the three is what we've been talking about with this team, and to an extent they have, but it's not because they're shooting too many. It's because they're getting away from what makes them do it the best.
Yeah, they don't have that huge advantage like they did for the first
bunch of games. That's 13 points. That's a big deal.
Oh, that's a swing. Missoula's been, you know, he's kind of gone after, called out the team here and there. How do you think the team has responded to that? Just sort of the Missoula experience. You know, we talk a lot about the players and what they look like on the court, but also a new spot for Missoula, defending a title and trying to keep his guys motivated. How do you think he's handling it?
Yeah, one thing about Joe is he will never rip his players publicly. He will go bend himself like a pretzel to really stay away from doing it publicly. So whatever he's saying in front of the microphones is a lot different from what's being said behind closed doors.
You don't think he's ripped him a little bit publicly?
No, he has.
Okay. Well, but yeah, maybe it's not specific on a player, just sort of how the team has played,
though. Well, team's effort and stuff like that.
It's not Jason Tatum does this.
I don't know if he was necessarily ripping them on Sunday when after the Pelicans game. Like, I think he really brought some interesting perspective. Like, listen, we're 28-11. And he said it sounded like a morgue in the room because everyone's asking about how poorly they've been playing, but they just won the game. So I found that interesting.
It's funny. He kind of caught himself because what did he say? He's like, we're in third place.
We're in third place.
But actually, he's like, well, that's not great. Like, he said some line like, all right, well, that's maybe not where we're
going
to be.
He made a great point, too, where,
I mean, they're way behind the Cavs now. Like, way behind.
Oh, they're 6 games behind the Cavs.
6 games. They somehow picked up a game, though, in that Pelicans game or the Kings game. They picked up a game. But I thought it was interesting to hear him say that with, like, you know, the perspective of the 28-11 and how they're, the expectations are kind of viewed differently. Because first of all, I mean, this team had sky-high expectations last year, and they met them. This year, they're still meeting them. In 28-11, they're still third-best record in the league. But it's just because they're not number one right now, because they're chasing the Thunder and the Cavs, people are looking at it comparatively to those two teams as well as last year. And it's just what they did last year, you couldn't have possibly expected them to do again. Like 64-18, that was top 5 in point differential in NBA history.
I expected it. We said early on in the year, we were both like, they're better than last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I know me and Rich, well, I'm not speaking for you, but me and Rich felt that way.
Not that he's the sole difference maker, but the way Peyton Pritchard was playing, I did not anticipate like 6th man of the year for him. So I did think they were going to kind of
expected,
fly
but
through.
You guys, I expected more than 64 wins.
That complacency would be the issue.
No doubt.
And that's human nature. And I said, even acknowledged that.
I said if they weren't going to win, if they're not going to win, complacency would be it. And they look complacent.
I do think complacency in the regular season is a lot different than what it is in the postseason. Like, these lapses that we're seeing now, and I'm not giving them an excuse here, because you can't have that now, because they preach it regular season is about building habits and really establishing what kind of team you are. Last year's team is last year's team. Those habits are last year. This year, they have to get back to establishing that, and they haven't done it. But they have earned the benefit of the doubt that come playoff time, they're going to figure it out, because they've shown they can. Look at the first half of the Thunder game, for example. I know they collapsed in the second half, but that was some of the best basketball they played all year in that first half. Against that defense, the way they scored the ball, they played great defense themselves. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown getting downhill when the threes weren't really falling. So they've earned the benefit of the doubt because they've been there and they've done that. And I actually thought Joe kind of used the championship card a little bit. Like, he was like, kind of relax. Like, we're going to figure this out. Where in years past, you're living and dying by every loss. And I don't think that's the case anymore.
So, you know, a lot of people want them to be the next Warriors, right? Like, go on that kind of a run. And so when you look back on it, Steve Kerr's first year of the Warriors, they win the title. They won 67 games. The next year, being the defending champion, they won 73.
Yeah.
They lost in the finals.
They were up 3-1.
But like this Celtics team has already lost more regular season games this year than that team did in their title defense. Now, then they get Kevin Durant. They come back the next year. They win 67 games in the regular season and the title. The year after that, they had injuries and stuff. They won 58 and the title. And then they won 57. So you could say, all right, like there were 2 years in there where they didn't hit 60 games. But it just goes to show, I mean, the target was on their back very much the same way the target is on the Celtics' back.
And they're still on pace for 58. Like, that's not bad. That would have won the Eastern Conference last year. 58 wins gets you in. It's just the Cavs are having this unbelievable season, and that's part of it.
So going back to the threes and the approach, do you think there's a team now? I've heard you say this before. No one can outshoot them in a seven-game series, and they're not going to stay ice cold for, you know, four losses in a seven-game series. Do you still feel that way, or are there teams that can outshoot them now? Because, for instance, Cleveland, as a team, is shooting on 41 attempts a night, 40% from three.
Yeah, I mean, they're lights out. It's not necessarily teams can't outshoot them. It's just teams can't beat them in a seven-game series because the Celtics have other ways to win, and they've shown that they can adapt. And, again, I keep referencing that Thunder game, but threes weren't falling in the first half. They were getting downhill. They've shown their ability to get downhill and score in other ways. It's just right now in the regular season, again, it's about building habits. You're going to stick with what worked last year, what you believe works. You're going to stick with your system. So they're not necessarily showing their cards right now. They've been very experimental this year with their lineups, with some of the actions they're running. So it's been different. So come the postseason, it's not necessarily about outshooting. That's a big thing. Don't get me wrong, but it's just not beating them in a seven-game series. It's just they're that talented.
Is there something you can put your finger on when they have their top nine guys that it doesn't look great? It seems like they're almost better off, and there's some of their best games are when one or sometimes two of their top nine guys are out.
Yeah, that starting five with Kristaps Porzingis in there has not been great.
Yeah.
It's night and day. It's like a huge difference in the net rating when Al Horford's on and Kristaps is off. And I do think there's some truth to them kind of getting reacclimated and stuff, but they're over 130 minutes now. They've only played two less games than the starting five with Horford. So at some point, results have to come. And it's not all about like, oh, we're going to figure it out. Don't worry, we're going to figure it out.
You think they'd ever change the starting lineup?
I don't. I mean, this has been, and it's not really that far-fetched, but I think it's really nearsighted when you're talking about moving Kristaps to the bench. I mean, you've already kind of done this with Al. And granted, Al doesn't shoot very well off the bench. He accepted that role, but he didn't really thrive in it last year. Ended up starting more games than he came off the bench last year. So I think just because you've already established it, that this is what it's going to be when everyone's healthy. Also, I wonder if Joe's kind of loving this. Like these guys, this top five, they're not going to be, there's no entitlement here. Like, they got to work through this.
Does it sound like he's loving it? Because I know you're saying he's not calling him out and criticizing him, but he has kind of referenced a couple of times they're not playing their best. You brought up one. Yeah. He questioned their effort earlier in the year. I don't know if Joe's loving it.
Well, I'm talking specifically for the starting
five. To keep them motivated. I get that.
Porzingis.
But I'm saying, I don't know. Like, we're midway through the year. I don't know that you want to, you know, keep having to deal with these issues.
I mean, as much as he wanted, like, I remember he's in the offseason, he said he wanted the target right in between their eyes. They want to see the red dot. As much as he wanted that, it's just not realistic. Like, every championship team does this. Like, you're not going to be as locked in as you were last year. Like, they had something to prove last year, coming off especially that Eastern Conference Finals loss against Miami. They really
most championship teams don't repeat.
Right.
And so,
well, recently,
yeah,
they used to
correct.
All the time.
No, I mean, used to be done very, very consistently. But right, the last six haven't.
And none of them made it out of the second round.
Yeah. So to me, there are things to pay attention to. Like,
people are going
to
say the target's on our back, but I hope it's right in our forehead, in between our eyes. I hope I can see the red dot.
A famous answer. And who said it?
Serial killer?
No, that's actually your head coach.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, these are all potential red flags. I have some questions on the Celtics sale, Keefe. I don't know if you have more on the team.
On the sale? No, although I'd say it's good timing for this guy.
Scotty Barnes is going to be all-star.
See him tonight, right? Unless he's hurt, he'll see the Raptors. That was one of the games recently where you're wondering what's going on with this team, and then they won by like 50 points.
They got in trouble earlier in the year. Remember Jason Tatum?
They did.
That was New Year's Eve, the blowout
the
one?
The trouncing, yeah. They won by 52.
They just smoked them.
Yeah. Himmelsbach had a story yesterday. In a letter to stakeholders obtained by the Globe, the Celtics will begin receiving bids from prospective buyers on January 23rd. So what is that, next week? And ownership is, quote-unquote, pleased with the broad level of interest that has emerged.
Hmm.
Where are we at with that? I mean, I know that's Himmelsbach's report. Where are we at
with
Courtney
the... Courtney told us who was interested, right?
Well, that's true. That is true. We have a list of that.
So.
Speaking of lists, she's on Keefe's. Yep. But where are we at with that sale? I mean, I'm surprised at the lack of news and dribs and drabs of information. I don't know what you're hearing or how much it even is a discussion point, but I'm surprised we're still getting like a first round of bids next week.
I'm kind of surprised of how slow this is going. Like, yes. It made it sound like when Wick announced the sale right after the finals that this was going to fly around. Like, they're going to get this done quick. Like, they're taking their time here. Think of the Celtics, though, is they hold everything really tight to the vest. Like, they don't show their card. So there really isn't much conversation about this. Wick Grosbeck has still been at every game on the sideline, and he's still into it. And he's been clear that he wants to remain on and as governor past the sale. But I'm just shocked how slowly this is moving. Like, they made it sound like it was going to fly.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, them winning the title is not a stretch, right? They're the favorite to win the title. So if they win the title, is Wick going to be the one that gets the trophy right away? And he's like, this is great. And like the next guy can have it or whatever. Like that's going to be like a weird thing. I can't remember a time in sports where the winning team had the owner on stage and you knew the team was up for grabs like at any moment.
Right. Like did the Marlins have a sale shortly after? Like, but after,
oh,
after 97 winning.
Maybe? Yeah. Oh, after winning. But like, I thought when they were on stage, I don't think you knew it.
Correct. That's why.
Whereas
what
this
year,
this has been like a year in the making.
We definitely.
It was like a week after the parade.
We definitely didn't know it last year.
No, it was
we're
after
like,
the parade.
Oh, Wick.
Was it like, right after the parade?
Yes. Yeah. It was 20 like, years, 20
there
years
was still
of lies.
Confetti in the streets. Yeah. It was that soon after. Yeah. I would be interested if like the new. Whoever the highest bidder was, like, is that guy on the stage?
Like, his first day? He's like, great first day on the job.
Bezos just shoves him out of the way.
Yeah. It's like, I'll take it from here.
It doesn't feel like it's going to be done anytime
soon. I don't think so. Like, something that, like that.
It's just so bizarre because they made it. And obviously, you're talking about it in ridiculous amount of money, though.
Yeah. Like, so, but I just wonder, what does that speak to? Does that speak to a lack of interest? Does that speak to
maybe PAGs, too high of an asking price? PAG,
exactly. That's why I say lack of
interest.
That's what I mean.
But yeah.
It's just they're asking for too much and they're still rounding up bids because there hasn't been an overwhelming bid.
Because
so
usually
it speaks to Pagliuca being the favorite. Like, I don't really know how to read it, but the fact it's taking a long time.
I feel
feels
like,
telling.
And maybe I'm missing a few, but most of the teams in the four major sports that have been sold recently were because their owner did something awful and they got pushed out. So, like, the Clippers, the Commanders, the Panthers, it was like, you're done, sell the team, let's move on. Now it's, if you're a prospective buyer, aren't you like, wait, why are you selling the team?
Right.
Like, you're at the top. Like, you've been fighting for this the whole time. So
let me look under the hood.
Yeah.
Open up the books. Like, what's going on?
Oh. Like, it's got nothing to do with our $500 million yearly payroll for our roster.
They see that tax bill coming
in.
Yeah,
they're like, what is this?
Yeah.
They're like, well, that's...
Well, that's the thing, too, with whoever the new owner is. Like, you can't just... Even Wick would have done it. There's going to have to be moves because of how much this roster costs. So whenever this new owner comes in, it feels like they're already going
to
be persona non grata.
Right, they have to be the bad guy.
They're the bad guy right away.
We can't pay Porzingis this, or we can't pay Drew Holiday that, and then they're making moves and people are going to hate him. Where it's like, I remember when Wick was here? It's like, yeah, he didn't even own the team.
And he wouldn't, but like, he couldn't even justify this. Like, no person can justify this. Not even a businessman.
It's a lot.
Whoever comes in that's going to be kind of tough.
But that's like, if you have the greatest house in the world, you're selling it. Like, why are you selling it? It's like, because it's so great. Because it's so great.
Like, I love it so much. I want someone else to live here.
It's like, I'm moving in the same town. Yeah. But I don't want this house anymore. Like,
yeah,
okay.
I mean, look, there's very, very few of the uber rich. And you know, Wick and Irv are not in that group. I mean, they're very rich people, but they're not in the Bezos, that level.
Right.
There's very few that could afford the bill. And then there's a whole other level. Is it questionable or smart business, good business to do it? He's Justin Turpin. You can check him out. All over social media, Justin M. Turpin, Celtics videos, Celtics information, and, of course, a big part of Jones and Keith here on WEEI. Turp, we appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys. I'm going to go back to my closet now.
Please, if you could. The Twitch closet down there. Yeah. Go pound sand, Turp. And he joins us every Wednesday for some guaranteed Celtics discussion. Billy Lanny with all the latest here in trending. And when we come back, let's get back to the Patriots offensive coordinator search, where it stands, the importance level of it. And, who's the ideal candidate? We'll do that.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah. Try my real American beer, brother.
Okay, Vraves is the man.
Vraves is the man. You feel a little bit better, don't you?
I admittedly feel much better yesterday. Curran already had me feeling better. What? Wolfpack?
I don't think we're going to be hearing that much this year.
Less of a pack.
No, just that's a lone wolf. Mike Vrabel.
He's a lone wolf.
He's like, why don't you...
He's not the alpha wolf.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be the alpha.
He's like, hey, Elliot, why don't you...
That's Elliot Wolf. No,
why don't you take all the prospects and put them in alphabetical order for me? Why don't you do that? That's kind of what's going to happen. Then Vrabel will go in there and pick his guy. That's at least how I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Now, am I still worried about Elliot Wolf, you know, the cockroach surviving? Am I still worried about that? And like I said, in 4 or 5 years, you know, can he get carve out some power? Sure. Him surviving, I still think is a bad sign and has the potential for impacting power dynamics, but it sounds like immediately Vrabel's going to have power. Good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Schefter says Vrabes is the man. Curran, and again, we'll play that for you coming up with us yesterday. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app, and on YouTube, Vrabel's going to be the guy. Okay, good. So now Vrabel's the guy, and now you need an offensive coordinator. I think it's the next biggest decision to maximize Drake May. Vrabel is the coach. Vrabel is in charge of personnel. Those were the two biggest moves. Coach, personnel guy. Check, check. Now it's OC. Where does it stand? Who do you want? What's ideal? How significant of a hire? You can jump in. 617-779-7937. Who's the ideal candidate, Keith?
I kind of like, I love Tanner Engstrom. I don't think it's going to happen. So he's the passing game coordinator for the Detroit Lions. So my guess is he'll just be promoted once Ben Johnson takes a job. But there is a scenario where Ben Johnson maybe he doesn't like any of the jobs, and maybe he stays. Still a young guy. Maybe he loves the Detroit offense. I'm sure he's getting paid well. Maybe he stays. And then Engstrom says, all right, I could stay too, or do I get an opportunity to run my own offense somewhere? So I would be a big fan of that. I also don't mind the idea of Dave Ragone, which was a guy that got brought up by Mike Reese.
Admittedly, not on my radar until yesterday, but yeah. when Reese gives you a trimmed-down list.
Yeah.
I go, okay, well, there's meaning behind this. Now, one of the names on there was Tommy Reese, who immediately was elevated in Cleveland, is now their offensive coordinator. But I think Reese has insight to the shortlist, and that name jumped out to me.
Yeah. Quarterbacks coach for the Rams, and that's where I'm looking to grab offensive coaches from. You know, who worked with Sean McVay, who worked with Ben Johnson, who worked with Kyle Shanahan, who worked with Matt LaFleur, who worked with Mike McDaniel. Like, that's sort of the new wave of this. I think if you give one of those guys to Drake May, potentially sky's the limit. So I would look in that kind of wheelhouse. You know, Nick Caley's name gotten brought up. I don't know if he would want to come back or the way negotiations went last year, if even they would want him. But he has spent a couple of years now with the Rams. So those are some of the guys that sort of jump out to me. I don't want to go to the Cleveland Browns. I don't want to go to the New York Giants. I don't want to go to some of these other failed offenses.
Well, that's where all of Rabel's guys are.
Correct.
All of Rabel's guys are with the Giants and the Browns, it seems.
So do you think Mike LaFleur would... Mike LaFleur is the offensive coordinator.
Is he in the Niners?
The Rams.
Oh, he's with the Rams.
So he's the
Rams. Did he come from the Niners? Doesn't matter.
Maybe.
Keep going.
They're all incestuous. They're probably all on that Redskins staff. Every year they put up that graphic of all those guys that were on the Redskins staff, and they let them all get away. Like Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel, Matt LaFleur. So maybe Mike LaFleur was there. But like being the offensive coordinator with the Rams is great, and you're going to get like a good look. And maybe he has aspirations to be a head coach. I don't know. But Sean McVay gets all the credit. Sean McVay calls the plays. So even though the title would be a lateral move, now you're like the play caller.
Yeah, who moved last year? Was it Zach Robinson? Was he technically the offensive coordinator with the Rams, and he still took a job elsewhere because he could be a play caller, I thought. Maybe he's the quarterback's coach. I'd have to look at the whole masthead.
Yeah.
Are you worried at all about, and in the case of Engstrom and Ragone, this would be the case for both, it's a check mark in Josh McDaniels' favor, or a guy who also was on Reese's shortlist, Tim Kelly, who called plays for Vrabel at the end in Tennessee. Are you worried at all about a first-time play caller?
No. I think if they were in the right spot, I'm less worried about it, especially because you have the veteran head coach. I think that guy provides so much more stability to the whole organization, so it's not too many people in a first-year spot. You know, we got some pushback yesterday saying, you know, you guys want a first-year guy. Like, wasn't that the problem last year with everybody? It's like, yeah, you had a first-year D coordinator, first-year head coach, and essentially a first-year play caller. And I know he did it in like the 90s, but it had been a while for
right. Van Pelt. For all intents and purposes, early 2000s. Van Pelt was a first-time
play caller. It was a long time. Yeah. So I think they had a hard time like leaning on each other. Whereas now, if you have Mike Vrabel, who's very confident in when to go for it, when not to go for it, maybe a suggestion here or there, I'll take my shot on the upstart guy. Real quick, Rams offensive coordinator history.
Yep.
When Sean McVay got there, you had Matt LaFleur in 17, then Kevin O'Connell for a couple years, then Liam Cohen, and then Mike LaFleur. So Liam Zach Robinson, I guess, must have been like pass game coordinator or QB coach.
So those were the – give me the list again.
Matt LaFleur, Kevin O'Connell.
Matt LaFleur is now – in Green Bay?
The head coach of the Packers.
That's what I'm saying. I get Matt and Mike mixed up. So that's a win.
He was in 2017.
Kevin O'Connell?
Yep.
Win.
Liam Cohen?
I think win, but we'll have to see if he's head coach material.
And Mike LaFleur. Yes, you're like not bad, right?
No, not bad
Do
at
you
all.
Like that better or Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, Bill O'Brien, Alex Van Pelt?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good tree right
and
there.
Look, McDaniels has a few things going for him. There's familiarity. He's not going anywhere. He's a veteran. But I'm
like high-ish floor, you could look at it, where you're like, the guy's never done it. Like, there's no concern about that.
I guess. I don't love starting Drake May over again at square one. Like, now, time to relearn the language and relearn the offense. And I don't want to overstate that because I think people complicate football.
Yeah,
and Drake, my favorite answer from Drake May last year is he's like, people try to make football complicated. It's really not.
That was a great line.
And so I just think there is an element to him wasting his time starting over instead of accelerating and taking a step.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather have somebody with similar lingo and a similar offense than starting over again at the ground level with McDaniels. But if you're going to do that to Drake May, now is the time. I'll at least acknowledge that. I think Ragone's interesting. He is a McVay guy. He has connections to Vrabel from 18 to 20 when he was in Tennessee. You brought this up. I was unaware of this. I just assumed based on the way that Reese wrote it, and I should have dug in further, I assumed he went right from his time with Vrabel to the Rams and McVay.
Incorrect.
He had 3 years with a Vrabel guy, Arthur Smith, in Atlanta. Arthur Smith called plays, but he was the offensive coordinator in title in Atlanta for those awful Arthur Smith years.
I don't know how much credit or blame or neither you would give to him there. Similar, like Alex Van Pelt from Cleveland.
He wasn't the play caller, but he gets some blame. I mean, he was there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess there's not a lot of credit to be had, but you know, 1 year they were middle of the pack, 2 years they weren't. They also had Matt Ryan, the corpse of Matt Ryan.
Not great.
Marcus Mariota.
Marcus Mariota, who I'm pretty sure walked away from the team in the middle of the season 1 year.
And Desmond Ritter. There's not a great deal to work with there, you know, so there is that. And it's not a perfect candidate. If you want to hold that against him, you can. I mean, Alex Van Pelt came from Cleveland. He wasn't calling the plays. Stefanski was. Those offenses weren't exactly lighting it up. And the good years that they had, you know, Stefanski gets more credit than Van Pelt would.
Real quick, before we get to the phones on this, you can give us your ideal candidate, the level of urgency or importance, rather, with this hire, 617-779-7937. You and I both heard Vrabel answer the question about McDaniels a certain way yesterday. He sounded very lukewarm.
Yeah.
You said your girl Courtney had a different read on that.
Friend of the show, Courtney Cox, thought it was a done deal, and he didn't want to give it away.
Which does make sense.
You can read it that way if you want.
Look, I didn't read
Rob
it that
Gronkowski
way.
Rob Gronkowski said your first call should be to Josh McDaniels.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look at every possible candidate.
So you and I, and I think Greg and Wiggy viewed it like, all right, he's not trying to bury Josh McDaniels, trying to keep it open like there's a candidate.
He knows Robert likes Josh McDaniels.
Yeah,
is the layer I would add to that, where it's like, I'm not going to insult Robert for making me interview him,
right?
But I don't want him. And he even said he's on a list, but it's a long list. He said that later on in the answer.
But also, there was a long list last year. You didn't get your first choice last year,
Fair. And
you ended up with Alex Van Pelt, so it makes no sense to bury him. And I guess Courtney wants to think he's not going to tell you that it's him, but if it is him, then he's maybe scrambling a little bit. So, I mean, maybe.
And in fairness to Courtney, I could see this playing out this way. They're under fire for their hiring process.
It's been a mess.
They're under fire for basically hiring everybody before they've done a search. Vrabel was a bad job. If Josh McDaniels looks like a bad job, that's not good for them. So I can see reading it that way. That's not how it sounded to me personally, but I don't think that's a bad theory. 617-779-7937. Our buddy Big Head Tony is up.
What's up, Tony? Big Head?
Hey, I want to apologize for cussing last week.
Sorry.
With my head in the clouds, you know.
Yep. Not a problem, Tony.
But never again. So I wrote, you know, a bunch of apologies. I wrote, I will not swear 420 times.
Good.
I took a little rock hammer, like from Shawshank, sat in my sandbox. I pounded sand.
Good.
For hours.
Smart,
you know,
beautiful.
To apologize. Anyways, Herman Boone and Bill Yost. Do you know those names?
Yes. The Remember the Titans coaches.
Oh.
Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
Bring in Bill O'Brien. Pay him all the money. Partner him with our boy Vrabel and see what happens.
Okay.
Well, Big Cat, I'll tell you what. They are very close friends.
Night.
They are very close friends. Bill O'Brien called in yesterday when Vrabel was on the Greg Hill Show.
I'll be honest. I was very entertained by that. All of a sudden, it was, where'd they say? Billy and Chestnut Hill was calling in.
Yeah, that's good.
And I was very entertained by Bill O'Brien calling in. I would say unprompted, maybe prompted for all I know.
No, he probably was listening
but
called
I was,
in.
I was
He's going to be on tomorrow, I think, with those guys.
I was entertained by that. It would be the inverse of how they work together in Houston. Vrabel, if you don't know, was eventually, not to start, but eventually Bill O'Brien's defensive coordinator before he got the Texans job, or the Titans job, rather, the head coach job. He was O'Brien's coordinator, so it would be flipped, and there'd be some symmetry there. I wouldn't want that.
I got such a bad taste for him 2 years ago. I wouldn't want that at all. Let Bill develop BC into something. Hopefully that turns into a competitive team that we can kind of pay half attention to. I'd rather that. If it wasn't for him being so bad 2 years ago, let's say he was doing something else or he started at BC earlier or whatever, maybe I'd be a little bit more open to the idea. If it was Bill O'Brien or Josh McDaniels, who'd you take? I think by the sound of it, Vrabel would take Bill O'Brien. I think he likes him more.
I think I would go O'Brien in that scenario. That's a close one, though.
I don't really want either one.
McDaniel's a better play caller, but at least there's a better relationship, it sounds, with O'Brien and Vrabel. I think I'd lean into that.
Yeah.
And it's the same offense.
Yeah. It's not ideal. Appreciate Big Head being upset about swearing.
He reprimanded himself. That's good.
I thought he wanted the Remember the Titans coaches.
That's where I thought he was going
to
go, too.
They ran six plays, three to the left, three to the right, but they ran them perfect.
That sounds like Vrabel's offense.
Derrick Henry left, Derrick Henry right, maybe a little Derrick Henry up the middle.
Sounds like what he wants to do.
It's like the Tecmo Bowl playbook. Is there another page? No.
No.
These are the pick one. There's one pass play. If you want to run it, run it.
Screen peeking must have been a real issue in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you got going on over
there?
You call that play? Boom, sack.
It's like eventually.
Sack launch.
You ever played me in Madden? Eventually, if QB Waggle was on the screen, I'm running the Waggle.
He's doing
it. It was like a dead
Michael
giveaway.
Michael Vick screen. Waggle, you're that guy? Like, oh, great. Playing with Michael Vick again.
Cool, man.
Yep.
I thought, why did he even bring up the Remember the Titans coaches? Because I was stumped by that. When he said, do you know who they are? I said, no, you had the answer.
So, those guys had a lot of friction early, but then I think they became they respected each other quite a bit. Maybe is what he's suggesting. Like, they ended up being good coaches together.
I get it.
Yeah. It's like two head coaches, maybe, is his point. Because he was head coach of the white school, head coach of the black school. They brought him together, and that's kind of what it was.
That was two head coaches. Yep. In fact, that's exactly what his subject line said. They need a head coach offense, head coach defense. It was effectively what Mayo tried to say last year about Van Pelt.
And then you got Ryan Gosling out there trying to play corner.
Nightmare.
Quitting on the team.
Couldn't keep up. He couldn't keep up. Slow as
Where's
hell.
Sunshine?
Sunshine had a rocket for an arm. Sunshine was incredible. Ronnie Bass?
He was a Sunshine or Drake Bay.
So, Sunshine.
You'd go Sunshine?
Yeah. Sunshine's one of the better fictional athletes, I think, ever. Hmm. He was ridiculous. And it's what the team needed. Jerry Bertier, good linebacker. You know?
Uh-huh.
It was a good team. They ended up, did they win state?
I mean, they've won more than this team has recently. I can tell you that.
That was a senior year football team field trip. It came out in high school, that movie did.
Field trip to go watch the movie?
The whole squad went.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Packed a bunch of
media. Did you guys all wear your jerseys to the movie theater?
Yeah, probably. Jerseys on, maybe the pants too. Helmets.
a lot of popcorn bucket jokes, I'd imagine. That's the right age for that.
Guys, wasn't popcorn? Try my popcorn. that's just a mess.
Same joke over and over again.
Oh, yeah, that great. Yeah. Thanks for the popcorn.
Yeah, no, I already fell for that.
Yeah, extra butter.
617-779-7937. Speaking of maximizing Drake May, maybe if he stuck around and wasn't on vacation, that would help him in year two. Let's get to that next.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI, Celtics Wednesday. We talked to Terp earlier.
We'll do that every Wednesday here, all Celtics season long. So if you have Celtics questions, you want to file away, Celtics Talk, guaranteed Celtics Talk every week. We'll do that on Wednesdays with Turb. Check out the Odyssey app and also on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. Meanwhile, we have Drake May going on vacation. Pictures emerged yesterday.
Hey, well-earned vacation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Rookie year, first year as a pro. Mm-hmm. You want to, you know, relax a little bit. A little R&R.
Played a whole drive against Buffalo.
Played one drive.
Yeah.
Played, what, 10, 11 games, whatever mm-hmm. it might have been.
Ish.
Like a college season.
Not full games.
No.
But so.
He won it all game.
Our guy, Savage Sports, I think blew the lid off this yesterday.
Got it.
From Drake May's girlfriend's Instagram.
All right.
That they're on vacation somewhere. God knows where.
What the hell are we doing?
We talked about this earlier, Keith. This does not bother me that he didn't leave his vacation and come back for Mike Vrabel's introductory press conference.
Not at all.
That doesn't bother me. We talked about this in real time as it happened. It doesn't bother me that Drake May did not talk after the Buffalo game. Give Joe Milton the spotlight. Joe Milton played. You only played a series. Let Joe Milton talk and have his moment in the one game he played all year. I'm fine with that one. The only thing I've questioned with Drake May is him not talking on breakup day, the day after the season ended, where guys who had been hurt and not playing, you referenced them earlier, David Andrews, Christian Gonzalez, those guys talk. We know how much Christian Gonzalez hates talking.
Yeah.
He hate talks to us every Monday.
Yeah, but now he's in a bunch of commercials. Have you guys noticed that?
No.
Really?
He was in one for a grocery store that I saw yesterday with Jonathan Jones.
He's there's subtitles.
He mimes one of them, and then the other one, he just kind of gives like a thumbs up.
No, I was unaware of that.
I think they heard the 10 questions with
Man-to-man-to-man.
And like, this guy oozes personality.
So we know how much that guy hates to talk. And even dealing with a concussion, showed up and was talking the day after the season.
Yeah.
That's the only one I look at and go, huh.
Yeah, where were you then? That's the only one. I'm the same way.
The day after your coach got fired.
Coach got fired. Season's over. It's time to like wrap up. And like I don't even know how many guys were available, but the majority of them. Andrew, the quarterback, you know, if he was, let's say they drafted Marvin Harrison hypothetically, and he had a good rookie year or a fine rookie year, and then was gone, he'd still be like, hey, man, like you're one of the better players. Thought maybe you'd talk to you. But being the quarterback is different. Like that's just a different level of responsibility and leadership and all that other stuff. Like he's going to automatically be a captain next year. I think every starting quarterback in the NFL is a captain. Even some of the rookies this year were named captains who started right away. So he's going to be, I mean, he's already the face of the team. And I don't know. I think when you don't, because even in, people are saying, well, what is he going to say? Even if it's all the cliche answers, it's just, all right, that's kind of part of the role. Whereas now not going, you end up reading into all these different things. Like, why wasn't he there? Like, what was he thinking? This, that, and the other thing.
Do you think, and he called all the reports about Mayo losing his job BS. We referenced that earlier in the show, So it turns out they weren't BS at all.
No.
People like to call reports BS when they really have no idea what they're talking about.
Not even regular S.
That's true.
Let alone BS.
Do you think he's upset in any way? I can't imagine. Like,
I bet
how could you be on that team with how awful they were, how much of a disaster Mayo was, and be upset about it?
Yeah, but you also, do you want to go out there and be like really happy now? Like it's a weird line. Maybe you have to, you don't want to like bury the guy because that's also a bad look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know if anybody told him like, hey, maybe you should be there, or if anybody told him the other, like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be there. I have no idea.
Oh, we have an update from Savage Sports.
Savage Sports update.
He has screen grabbed an image from Drake May's timeline on Instagram.
All right.
And it's an image of Coach Vrabel settling in. So that's, I don't know.
Was he told to do this?
I mean, maybe.
Okay, can you at least post like a picture?
Just post something from the beach.
Like there's something like, just like something like congratulate Vrabes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. I guess. I mean, I'm sure they'll be fine, but it is, him not being at the press conference, you and I both agree, who cares?
I don't care that he didn't leave his vacation and come back for the press conference. I don't care about that. But not talking after breakup day, the day after your coach got fired, you just wonder if there's something going on. And I'm just curious to hear. I'm genuinely curious to hear, what does Drake May think of Gerard Mayo getting fired?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Vrabel getting hired?
Alex Van Pelt uncertainty.
Like, I'm just curious what he thinks of all that, mm-hmm. because he's the quarterback here. Yeah. He's the de facto leader here.
Yeah.
So what is the de facto leader of the team, whether he's a captain or not in title? You just illustrated that. I was curious to hear his thoughts on it, and I wonder what he's going to say because he hasn't said it yet. That's all.
Twitch chat saying he's 22 years old, which I think is true. Yeah. But he was also 22 when he did all the press conferences, all the interviews with Hart and Arcand.
Here's the easiest game to play. Caleb Williams is how old?
22.
I'd imagine he's the same age. Yeah. Would you feel any different if it was Caleb Williams?
People probably would.
I can tell you right now I'd hate it with Caleb Williams because he had all these red flags about leadership coming into the league, and I largely feel good about Drake May as a leader. And most of his comments this year, I referenced the one earlier about people complicate football and all this stuff. I think he's been a good teammate, even to a fault where he was trying to clap up the defense after the Chicago game. It was cringy and awkward, I liked what he was trying to do there. So
he's like, all right, let's get two claps for Coach Mayo.
I think he's a net positive as a leader, but this is something that I don't love. And you wouldn't love it either if it was Caleb Williams.
I want to go home and cuddle my dog and watch some shows.
Oh, my God, that sounds like a dream. Cuddling with my dog, watching really some shows. That's all I want to do.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. My dog likes
getting smoked by Washington.
You could catch up on Traitors.
I would watch catch up on Traitors.
Yeah.
Snuggle with my dog. Maybe get like a little blanket, a couple beers. That's living.
That did noticeably leave out beers. I mean, I would want to
add he's a pro athlete. Yeah, that's fine.
It's implied.
I'm a 40-year-old, so there is a difference.
If you're snuggling up and watching shows, there's going to be beers.
Yeah, a couple dog treats.
Yeah.
Yeah, little snacks.
But fine, he's 22. So is Caleb Williams. Would you have any issues if it was Caleb Williams? You probably would.
How old's Christian Gonzalez?
Yeah, young.
He spoke.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even play the day before and he's concussed. Mm-hmm. If he'd get much more of an excuse. If you're like,
Gonzalez is 22.
22.
Great.
And he's in a room with bright lights. He should probably get out of there. Like, that's more of a reason to not be there. Even David Andrews, he didn't have to speak. Would you have been like, where the hell was David Andrews? Like, guy hasn't played all year. He's, like, the most senior leader member of the team and all that. So I thought that it was good that he was there and talking about it. But he didn't have to be there.
No. So here's what I would say about Drake May, not to channel my inner Mayo there. Mm-hmm. What I would say is it's something to watch with Drake May. It doesn't mean he's a bad leader. I think a net positive leader. But now this is something to follow because he blew off the end of the year interviews. Again, I don't care that he didn't cancel his vacation.
Is he like Rafael Devers? Where just losing streak and then it's like, where'd he go?
File it away. Let's monitor it going forward with Drake May. Maybe he's a great leader, a spectacular leader. It was just a weird situation where he didn't want to be available after the last day of the year, the day after his coach got fired. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's something to watch. And I'm gonna keep watching.
So when will he talk next? Minicamp?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, would you rule out they do some kind of in-house hostage cam thing where they kind of force him to do it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, get Fitzy down there and interview him.
What did Vrabel call it when he walked into with the PFW guys, the retirement home?
Yeah, you can have him go on with those guys.
He goes in and does a hostage cam thing with the retirement home there? Yeah. Maybe.
You could do that.
I wouldn't rule something out. But like formally, probably minicamp. Yeah. It's probably the next time we hear from him. 617-779-7937. We'll get to that. And how do you rebuild the roster this offseason? Where do you start? Is it wide receiver before O-line? Where does running back fit into all of it? Are we ignoring the defense? Let's do that with your phone calls next.